Chapter 24. She did not know exactly what he meant, and was too much perturbed by the idea of having to communicate with Nick, to follow any other train of thought. How could she write such a letter? And yet how could she confess to the lawyer that she had not the courage to do so? He would, of course, tell her to go home and be reconciled. She hesitated perplexedly. Wouldn't it be better, she suggested, if the letter were to come from your office? He considered this politely. And the whole. No. If, as I take it, an amicable arrangement is necessary to secure the requisite evidence, then a line from you, suggesting an interview, seems to me more advisable. An interview? Is an interview necessary? She was ashamed to show her agitation to this cautiously smiling young man, who must wonder at her childish lack of understanding, but the break in her voice was uncontrollable. Oh, please write to him, I can't. And I can't see him. Oh, can't you arrange it for me? She pleaded. She saw now that her idea of a divorce had been that it was something one went out or sent out to buy in a shop. Something concrete and portable that Strefford's money could pay for, and that it required no personal participation to obtain. What a fool the lawyer must think her. Stiffening herself, she rose from her seat. My husband and I don't wish to see each other again. Dot, I'm sure it would be useless. Dot 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 and very painful. You are the best judge, of course. But in any case, a letter from you, a friendly letter, seems wiser. Dot 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 considering the apparent lack of evidence. Dot dot dot. Very well then, I'll write, she agreed, and hurried away, scarcely hearing his parting injunction that she should take a copy of her letter. That night she wrote. At the last moment it might have been impossible, if at the theater little Breckenridge had not bobbed into her box. He was just back from Rome, where he had dined with the Hickses. Bang up show, they're really Lances, you wouldn't know them. Comma and had met their Lansing, whom he reported as intending to marry Coral as soon as things were settled. Who were dead right, weren't you, Susie, he snickered, that night in Venice last summer, when we all thought you were joking about their engagement. Pity now you chucked our surprise visit to the Hickses, and sent Streff up to drag us back just as we were breaking in. You remember? He flung off the treff airily, in the old way, but with a tentative side glance at his host, and Lord Altringham, leaning toward Susie, said coldly, as Breckenridge speaking about me? I didn't catch what he said. Does he speak indistinctly, or am I getting deaf, I wonder? After that it seemed comparatively easy, when Strefford had dropped her at her hotel, to go upstairs and write. She dashed off the date and her address, and then stopped, but suddenly she remembered Breckenridge's snicker, and the words rushed from her. Ick dear, it was July when you left Venice, and I have had no word from you since the note in which you said you had gone for a few days, and that I should hear soon again. You haven't written yet, and it is 5 months since you left me. That means, I suppose, that you want to take back your freedom, and give me mine. Wouldn't it be kinder, in that case, to tell me so? It is worse than anything to go on as we are now. I don't know how to put these things, but since you seem unwilling to write to me, perhaps you would prefer to send your answer to Mr. Frederick Spearman, the American lawyer here. His address is 100 Boulevard Hausman. I hope, she broke off on the last word. Hope? What did she hope, either for him or for herself? Wishes for his welfare would sound like a mockery, and she would rather her letter should seem bitter than unfeeling. Above all, she wanted to get it done. To have to rewrite even those few lines would be torture. So she left hope, and simply added, oh, hear before long what you have decided. She read it over, and shivered. Not one word of the past, not one allusion to that mysterious interweaving of their lives which had enclosed them one in the other like the flower in its sheath. What place had such memories in such a letter? As he had the feeling that she wanted to hide that other Nick away in her own bosom, and with him the other Susie, the Susie he had once imagined her to be. Dot, neither of them seemed concerned with the present business. The letter done, she stared at the sealed envelope till its presence in the room became intolerable, and she understood that she must either tear it up or post it immediately. She went down to the hall of the sleeping hotel and bribed the night porter to carry the letter to the nearest post office, though he objected that, at that hour, no time would be gained. Wanted out of the house, she insisted, and waited sternly by the desk, in her dressing gown, till he had performed the errand. As she re-entered the room, the disordered writing table struck her, and she remembered the lawyer's injunction to take a copy of her letter. A copy to be filed away with the documents in Lansing versus Lansing. She burst out laughing at the idea. What were lawyers made of, she wondered. Didn't the man guess, by the mere look in her eyes and the sound of her voice, that she would never, as long as she lived, forget a word of that letter, that night after night she would lie down, as she was lying down tonight, to stare wide-eyed for hours into the darkness, while a voice in her brain monotonously hammered out, Nick dear, it was July when you left me. Dot dot and so on, word after word, down to the last fatal syllable. XXII, Strefford was leaving for England. Once assured that Susie had taken the first step toward freeing herself, he frankly regarded her as his affianced wife, and could see no reason for further mystery. She understood his impatience to have their plans settled. It would protect him from the formidable menace of the marriageable, and cause people, as he said, to stop meddling. Now that the novelty of his situation was wearing off, his natural indolence reasserted itself, and there was nothing he dreaded more than having to be on his guard against the innumerable plans that his well-wishers were perpetually making for him. Sometimes Susie fancied he was marrying her, because to do so was to follow the line of least resistance. To marry me is the easiest way of not marrying all the others. She laughed, as he stood before her one day in a quiet alley of the Bois de Bowlen, insisting on the settlement of various preliminaries. Believe I'm only a protection to you. An odd gleam passed behind his eyes, and she instantly guessed that he was thinking. And what else am I to you? She changed color, and he rejoined, laughing also. Well, you're that at any rate, thank the Lord. She pondered, and then questioned. In the interval, how are you going to defend yourself for another year? Ah, you've got to see to that. You've got to take a little house in London. You've got to look after me, you know. It was on the tip of her tongue to flash back. If that's all you care, but caring was exactly the factor she wanted, as much as possible, to keep out of their talk and their thoughts. She could not ask him how much he cared without laying herself open to the same question, and that way terribly. As a matter of fact, though Strefford was not an ardent wooer perhaps from tact, perhaps from temperament, perhaps merely from the long habit of belittling and disintegrating every sentiment and every conviction, yet she knew he did care for her as much as he was capable of caring for anyone. If the element of habit entered largely into the feeling, if he liked her, above all, because he was used to her, knew her views, her indulgences, her allowances, knew he was never likely to be bored, and almost certain to be amused, by her, why, such ingredients, though not of the fieriest, were perhaps those most likely to keep his feeling for her at a pleasant temperature. As he had had a taste of the tropics, and wanted more equable weather, but the idea of having to fan his flame gently for a year was unspeakably depressing to her. Yet all this was precisely what she could not say. The long period of probation, during which, as she knew, she would have to amuse him, to guard him, to hold him, and to keep off the other women, was a necessary part of their situation. She was sure that, as little Breckenridge would have said, she could pull it off, but she did not want to think about it. What she would have preferred would have been to go away no matter where, and not see Strefford again till they were married. But she dared not tell him that either. A little house in London, she wondered. Well, I suppose you've got to have some sort of a roof over your head. I suppose so. He sat down beside her. If you like me well enough to live at Altrincham someday, won't you, in the meantime, let me provide you with a smaller and more convenient establishment? Still she hesitated. The alternative, she knew, would be to live on Ursula Gillow, Violet Melrose, or some other of her rich friends, any one of whom would be ready to lavish the largest hospitality on the prospective Lady Altrincham. Such an arrangement, in the long run, would be no less humiliating to her pride, no less destructive to her independence, than Altrincham's little establishment. But she temporized. She'll go over to London in December, and stay for a while with various people, then we can look about. All right, as you like. He obviously considered her hesitation ridiculous, but was too full of satisfaction at her having started divorce proceedings to be chilled by her reply. And now, look here, my dear, couldn't I give you some sort of a ring? A ring? She flushed at the suggestion. That's the use, Streff, dear. With all those jewels locked away in London, oh, I dare say you'll think them old-fashioned. And, hang it, why shouldn't I give you something new? I ran across Ellie and Bockheimer yesterday, in the Rue de la Paix, picking out sapphires. Do you like sapphires, or emeralds? Or just a diamond? I've seen a thumping one. I'd like you to have it. Ellie and Bockheimer. How she hated the conjunction of the names. Their case always seemed to her like a caricature of her own, and she felt an unreasoning resentment against Ellie for having selected the same season for her unmating and remating. I wish you wouldn't speak of them, Streff. As if they were like us. I can hardly bear to sit in the same room with Ellie Vanderlyn. Hello? What's wrong? You mean because of her giving up Clarissa? Not that only. You don't know, I can't tell you. She shivered at the memory, and rose restlessly from the bench, where they had been sitting. Strefford gave his careless shrug. Elle, my dear, you can hardly expect me to agree, for after all it was to Ellie I owed the luck of being so long alone with you in Venice. If she and Algy hadn't prolonged their honeymoon at the villa, he stopped abruptly, and looked at Susie. She was conscious that every drop of blood had left her face. She felt it ebbing away from her heart, flowing out of her, as if from all her severed arteries, till it seemed as though nothing were left of life in her, but one point of irreducible pain. Ellie at your villa? What do you mean? Was it Ellie and Bockheimer who, Strefford still stared? Who mean to say you didn't know? Who came after Nick and me? She insisted. Why, do you suppose I'd have turned you out otherwise? That beastly Bockheimer simply smothered me with gold. Ah, well, there's one good thing. I shall never have to let the villa again. I rather like the little place myself, and I dare say once in a while we might go there for a day or two. Susie, what's the matter? He exclaimed. She returned his stare, but without seeing him. Everything swam and danced before her eyes. Then she was there, while I was posting all those letters for her. Letters, what letters? What makes you look so frightfully upset? She pursued her thought, as if he had not spoken. He and Algy Bockheimer arrived there the very day that Nick and I left? I suppose so. I thought she'd told you. Ellie always tells everybody everything. She would have told me, I dare say, but I wouldn't let her. Well, my dear, that was hardly my fault, was it? Though I really don't see, but Susie, still blind to everything but the dance of dizzy sparks before her eyes, pressed on as if he had not heard him. It was their motor, then, that took us to Milan. It was Algy Bockheimer's motor. She did not know why, but this seemed to her the most humiliating incident in the whole hateful business. She remembered Nick's reluctance to use the motor. She remembered his look when he had boasted of her aging. The nausea mounted to her throat. Strefford burst out laughing. Say you borrowed their motor? And you didn't know whose it was? How could I know? I persuaded the chauffeur. ... for a little tip. ... it was to save our railway fares to Milan, extra luggage costs so frightfully in Italy. ... Good old Susie. Well done. I can see you doing it. Oh, how horrible, she groaned. Horrible? What's horrible? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.